To better follow along with the Sober Eating Workshop, we suggest you download the forms that go with this workshop. You can find them at sober.oabirthday.org.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Nice.
All right. Good morning. Would you please join me in the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you for being here. This is the new Amway meeting, right? Oh, good. Sorry, sober eating. Anyway, I want to present Tim to you. I've heard wonderful things about him, so I guess he's going to tell us all about himself. So thank you, Tim.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me? Okay. Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. And this is the first time that we've done a sober eating panel. So thank you very much, Jeff, for coming up with this idea and asking us to put one together. So I guess I should start off. We'll welcome everyone here. Thanks a lot for coming. And I could start off with telling you a little bit about myself and how I came to this group of men who came up with this sober eating idea. And let's see. I've been in program, or I've been back from relapse five and a half years, and down 96 pounds. And so I came into program, I'd say 11 years ago, and I had dropped 80 pounds through running marathons and Ironman triathlons and all that stuff, and was running my what turned out to be my last marathon, and I was gaining weight as I was training for it. It was no longer new. It was no longer exciting. And so the weight was going up. And I was in another 12-step program. And I think White Flag Walter, that's how I remember, because he comes in with the white flag. And he 12-stepped me into OA. And on my last marathon, I decided to eat a large pizza the night before in my room. And it didn't turn out really well. And so I came back to OA, or I came to OA for the first time. I got the food plan, and I lost the weight right away. It was only 30 to 40 pounds at the time, but I had the food plan, and I didn't enlarge upon my spiritual condition. And after 2 years of abstinence, I went out and gained 100 pounds, a little more than 100 pounds, and I came back in 5.5 years ago, and I was ready to do the work, and I worked. I got a sponsor. His name was Adam, and he was the gentleman who introduced super eating with me. And after 30 days of absence, he sat me down. I mean, I knew right away flour and sugar were out for me. I knew once I started eating those, I was off to the races. He sat me down 30 days later, and he said, "You know, really, what have you put on your plate in the last 30 days that as soon as you started eating, you know, that food, you're already looking for your second helpings? You're already worried about who was taking the rest of what was in the bowl." And for me, I was ready to be very honest, because I was done losing the food. And so I told him it was potato salad. And it was rice. It didn't matter how much rice you put in front of me. I wanted more of it. And so, you know, he told me, he's like, we treat these foods, these alcoholic foods, just like the alcoholic treats the, what do you call it, alcohol. They don't touch them. There's no way we try to get those into our food program or our food plan. And so, you know, he says, my suggestion, that needs to be on your, you know, abstinence. And I was ready. I said, absolutely, I'll do it. And literally 5.5 years later, I've never had a food problem. My weight has gone up and adjustments have been made, you know, through my sponsor. But, I have never once triggered that obsession. I you know, and I was told very soon afterwards, if you don't pick up your foods, you'll never have another food problem. He guaranteed me not to have another food problem. And I haven't. I really have not had a food problem and not had a craving, an overwhelming craving. I've walked by pizza and gone, wow, that smells really good. But that's as far as it went. That obsession has been lifted. So what we can start off with here is does everyone have one of these sober eating? Here we go. All right. There's some right up here. And so it is, you know, this is just something that the group of gentlemen that I've worked with and, you know, have worked with me, Adam included, his sponsor, have come up with, this is the first time we've put together something like this. So, you know, hopefully it'll get better. So this is not a prescribed food plan. Everyone is different. We sit down on Sunday morning, we have a breakfast, everybody gets a little something. Some people can eat bread, others can't. It becomes very apparent at that breakfast that what triggers some people doesn't trigger all people. And so this is a food plan. It's not a prescribed food plan, but a method of defining a food plan by consulting with others. One of the things that we find very important is that we do not make unilateral food decisions by ourselves, because we are compulsive overeaters. We don't decide all of a sudden that we're going to switch our meals to something different. I can change my dinner because my sponsor and I have worked out a group of five or six dinners that are, you know, sober meals. I can go to any one of those. It doesn't really matter. But anything outside of that, it's got to be authored by someone other than me. And there have been times that I've had to go and talk to coworkers, to my wife, I mean, people that don't know me, and just say, listen, what does 8 ounces look like? Because I'll never be able to judge 8 ounces to me. I can tell you what 8 ounces looks to you, what 8 ounces should be. But when I'm going to eat it, it looks like a lot more than eight ounces is. And the sober eating is just the beginning of the program. Like I shared, you know, my experience was that when I had the food plan, but all of a sudden without any spiritual back, I didn't have the power to apply that food plan. And literally this has not been a chore for me to do this. You know, it has been a pleasure to do this. Remember the other way of doing it? The constantly obsessing about food. What's going to happen? How am I going to get it? Is that going to be enough? You know, this is a pleasure to do this. This is a joy. It really is to do the work, to work with other men and to share at meetings, to come down to the birthday party and talk to other people like you that, you know, this is my herd. I never wanted to be part of OA. No way, you know. But this, you guys are my family. And so that's the rest of the program. This is not the only approach to abstinence, you know. It's important to remember. I mean, is that good? Okay. You know, other people have different ideas. And, you know, this is just what's worked for us. Okay. And so what I would like to start off is just some definitions to what we have found, you know, with what is food addiction and what are some of the examples that when we hear people talk, this is what that they're still in the food. So on the first page it says, what is food addictions? We pulled it right out of the big book. It says, you know, it's the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And, you know, it's we believe. And so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average tempered drinker. The allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form, and once having formed the habit and found that they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I mean, when I was in the food, I remember, and it was literally shortly in abstinence, I was going in the grocery store and I'm flipping out. I was like, there's nothing here to eat. I'm going up and down the aisles and there's plenty. You know, but I was unable to make a decision on what to eat. And that's when I called. I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, and he's like, this is the obsession of the mind. This is what you want to be free from. And because I'll never be able to make, and I never will. I haven't yet in 5 years been able to make a sound food choice And so the choice is made by other people. And then I can live free. That's the great part. And later in the big book, it talks about men and women who drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontent unless they again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes from taking a few drinks. Drinks which they see others taking with impunity. They have succumbed to the desire again. And as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over unless a person can experience an entire psychic change that there is little hope for his recovery. You know. Perfect. This right here, I mean, the big book says it all. It's like there is no hope. This is repeated over unless a person and the psychic change that they talk about in the big book is a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. You know. I believe when I was in that grocery store and unable to make a decision, there's something changed for me that I couldn't handle a simple choice with food. And it became just very, very clear to me. And that was when I was willing to ask for help, you know, and it's help from anyone. I can get help anywhere. I literally take in my food and says, does this look, you know, I bring my food every day to work. You know, it becomes very simple. But there are times, I remember one time I packed all my chicken breast instead of my salad. So I had 5 chicken breasts in a Tupperware container and no salad. I'm like, this doesn't seem right. So I had to go to a fellow. I went to a fellow and I said, not a fellow in program, a coworker, and said, you know what my salad looks like. I need you to replace that salad for me, you know, with appropriate things. You know, and I, of course, had, you know, here's the choices. You know, there was no, you know, fried chicken or whatever would have been on that, for those choices. He made the choice. I made it through. And there was no obsession of the mind. The allergy wasn't triggered because there was no alcoholic foods. And then if I would have made that decision, well, I kind of liken it to self-confidence with food. Self-confidence with food. I want confidence. I want ease around food. I want peace around food. But if I have self-confidence, I don't have to make the trip down to LAX to tell you about this. I can do it alone. Well, no, I can do it alone. See, as long as I have the community help me make these decisions, and my wife has never, never not fed me enough food. Okay. When we've been out, she's never, never said, well, you got in an argument with me yesterday. But you know what? You're going to eat less today, type of thing. She has never done that. And believe me, I've given her plenty of opportunities to do that. But she has never not taken care of me. My coworkers who know nothing about food addiction have never not taken care of me. You know, my higher power is always there as long as I'm willing to surrender. If I think I need to control it, then I'm in trouble. You know, really, I will, again, come back to the baseline, always make bad food choices. It never gets better. It never gets better. So on the next page, these are some of the other things, you know, we started off with the big book definitions. Here's some of the other things we talk about with sober eating. It's not being able to stop eating certain foods once you start. Obsessively craving certain foods. Thinking you can control and intake your alcoholic foods. Negotiating with food. Using food to instantly change your state of mind. I mean, there was never a problem that food wouldn't solve. I mean, you know, we're kind of talking about one answer for all problems, and that's difficult for everybody to understand. It's like, you know, a higher power, God, whatever it is. You know, it's hard for everybody to believe that. But we always turn to food. We always turn to food before. There wasn't a time where it's like, you know what, I don't think I'm going to eat over this problem. You know, we ate over every kind of feeling. We ate over any kind of problem. A loss of a job, a loss of a girlfriend or a spouse, any good or bad, we always ate over it. And it's, you know, over time, always going back to the food. You know, that was one of the things for me. It was like, I was always good, out of the gate. I always started off really well. But I always faltered after time, like the first time in the program. You know, I thought it would get better. And in reality, it doesn't get better. It gets easier not to, as surrendering to it. It just gets easier not to go back to those foods, you know, because as long as someone else is making the decisions, I don't put my 2 cents in. My opinion on the food is unimportant. And so, And the next section is, you know, what is sobriety with food? It is a belief that we owe it to ourselves to deal with alcoholic foods like the alcoholic deals with alcohol. You know, I can make sane decisions about your food, but not about mine. You know, when my wife, again, she, it doesn't seem like it should work. You know, my wife always takes care of me with food. And this has just been working for 5.5 years. You know, that's, it doesn't make sense, you know, but I guess it never will. My coworkers can always, it's only happened a few times. I was in, Arkansas working. And I couldn't pack my food and bring it, you know, I was in a hotel and, you know, it just wasn't possible. But I was always taken care of. Let's see. All food decisions are made in consultation with someone else. Wives, coworkers, sponsors, fellows, anyone but you. That is really the key part. It's a lot of giving up control. But if we looked at ourselves before starting this or before coming to program, you know, we had to look at the results of our food choices. I don't think any of us are here because we were thin. That we were sane around food. Because, again, that would be the thing. It's not thin or fat. It's sane around food is what we're looking for. And, you know, another thing with sobriety for food, it's one plate of food. Unless approved by someone other than you. Again, my wife knows what my food plan looks like, what my salad looks like on what my dinner looks like, the 12 ounces of protein that I eat. I eat a lot of food, by the way. I eat a big portions of food. And I don't know why it works, but it just does work. And my wife knows what that looks like, and she's made sane substitutions where I'm like, I can't do that. I think four salads is going to make up for my one salad. And she's like, no, Tim, let's do it. Let's do two salads, you know. And so, you know, it just works. And I don't have to think about that. If I were to think, you know, if I could make that decision about food and be successful at it, I would. But I've tried it many, many times to once again make those decisions. Well, I can make this and it just never worked out. The food always came calling. So why are there struggles with food sobriety? Because again, we work with this group of men that we work with. You know, it's a very simple program. We sit here and it's very simple. It's just give up all control of food. You know, but it's simple. I mean, I still eat foods. Don't get me wrong. I still eat foods. I love my foods. You know, I've eaten the same salad for 5 years now, and I love it. I don't know why I love it. I do. I still have chicken. I've come up with more vegetables. I love vegetables now. You know, I don't eat foods. I don't eat diet foods. You know, if I had to sit down to a meal that I didn't enjoy, I don't do that. That's why I bring my food. I know I'm going to enjoy it every day. You know, it's simple. It costs more money, but man, this last 5 years have been the best. Have really been the best. And I'm willing to spend. There was never a budget for a binge. You know, did anybody ever set a budget? I really would like to see a show of hands that said, you know, I'm gonna pass up on that second pint of Haagen-Dazs. You know, because I can't afford it. You know, no, it didn't matter. I mean, I remember scrounging for change to get that second pint. So it's, you know, so with such a simple plan, eating only what's been approved. And again, it's not the same thing. It is just what's been authored by someone other than yourself. How do we as addicts willfully disregard our own sobriety commitment, resulting in a binge or an effort to control and enjoy our food? Well, we're going to get a chance to practice this afternoon, because if you looked ahead, you know, we're going to actually set a meal plan for the day. And somebody else is going to sign off on it for you. And that's difficult. It didn't get printed, but we're going to do, this is extra credit. So you guys get extra credit in this seminar. But willfulness, I have to be willing to not number one, trust another human being to say what looks sane for you. But I also have to give up that control. I'm an adult. You know, I do not want somebody to tell me. I still do not like people telling me what to do. I really don't. I mean, as an example, just a couple months ago, 2 months ago, it has nothing to do with food, but it's still my willfulness. I like to ride a bike, and I was riding down this hill going pretty fast. And I was in the lane doing proper, and some car pulled out, and he's like, he almost hit me, and he saw me, and he stopped. And as I'm going by, he says, "Slow down." And I'm like, "Exactly. That's exactly the reaction. Huh, yeah, how could you do that? Tell me what to do, and I'm in the right here." So, and that wasn't enough to just wave and keep going by. I'm going down the hill, remember, and I slam on my brakes. And again, to let him know that he's not going to tell me what to do. And I let go of the wrong brake to flip him off, and I went right over my handlebars. Yeah. It literally has taken 2 months. It's taken 2 months for my arm still feels bad because I crashed on the ground. But I didn't want to be told what to do. And it's just that simple. And it, all my life I've bucked that, you know. And it's like, with the food, I was done 5.5 years ago. Thank goodness I was done fighting the good fight, you know. And I just really couldn't handle it anymore. And so that's been, but entitlement, absolutely. We're entitled to choose our own food. We've been told if you don't like it, you don't need to eat it all of our lives. If you don't want it, don't eat it. Well, I didn't, when I came in here 5.5 years, I didn't want a vegetable. But I was told this is going to be the staple of your life here. This is going to be what's going to keep you healthy, sane, and sober. You know, safe, sane, and sober is what this is going to keep you. You know, and I'm like, I did not want to be told that. But that was what we had to give up. Denial, minimizing. That's another big one. That, I hear a lot of shares. I heard one yesterday about, a woman trying banana bread, even though, because she wanted to see if it would trigger that reaction for her. And it's like, oh, okay, it was small. It was just one bite. But it's okay. And, the way I was shown and the way I worked the program, that's a break in abstinence. That's not a slip. That's a break in abstinence. You have taken one of your alcoholic foods and put it in your mouth. It's very, very clear that, as soon as you pick up a food that's outside your food plan or more than your food plan, that's a break in abstinence. That's not a slip. This becomes very clear. And so, that's why I say 96 pounds, because that's where I'm at this month. I weigh once a month. I want to be very clear with my physical recovery is. I mean, I can tell you all day what all my other recovery is, but the scale is going to tell me how it's working in the physical world. And so we don't want to be clear as one Alan likes to say is, I had chicken breast for lunch. Well, I had 3 chicken breasts for lunch. What's the real thing when we send in our food? I had chicken for lunch. Well, that was 3 chicken breasts. It's like, we could put 3, as long as you're willing to be honest, you could put 3 chicken breasts and it might be okay with your sponsor. That's fine. Just be honest about it. I had the great raisin experiment for me in, 2010, I remember I was golfing one day and, I couldn't bring my fruit with me. Of course, a piece of fruit would go bad in my golf bag. So I got a bag of raisins. I had 12 ounces of that. That's my, and I'll tell you kind of how much my food, it's like 12 ounces is my snack of fruit. And, I brought 12 ounces of raisins and I wrote it down. I didn't think anything. It wasn't like I was trying to hide it. I wrote it down. And so my sponsor didn't say a word. I was like, great. So then 12 ounces, that became the default. That became the default. And it was so funny because I would go to Costco. It wasn't just a 12-ounce bag. I would go to Costco and get the 6-pound box, And I would, I reported it every day. My sponsor never said a word. My weight just went up. And he's like, okay, it's now time. And as I reported my food, I started getting crazy about weight. And he's like, so what's going on? I said, my weight's up. And he goes, well, what do you eat? I'm like, this and this. Oh, so it's the raisins. You made the choice to, switch the raisins. I was honest about it. And so now raisins. Because it was funny. I wouldn't stop eating. I would go back and forth between the fruit and the raisins. But until, what do you call it? Until I, I wouldn't go back to the raisins, or I wouldn't go back to the fruit until the whole 6 pounds of raisins was gone. You know, that would, and then I, when I would forget to buy my raisins at Costco, I'd be like, oh, jeez, oh, peach, you know. It was such a big thing. How could I forget my raisins? So, it's very subtle. You know, it's not once you get it, it doesn't change. The road actually narrows a little bit as you go along. There's foods that, you know, and the guys will tell you that it's like, this is something that is an evolving thing, but it evolves with someone else. Defiance. Again, I think I explained defiance with my flipping the guy off. What do you call him? Isolation. This is another, a big one. This is what I talked about when I said, if I have self-confidence with food, if I've got it, you know, if I've got this, I don't need you. I don't need to come and talk. I don't need to listen. I don't need to go to meetings. A big thing for me is a podcast, is speakers on tapes. I love it. I mean, to start the day off like that, you know, with someone else talking about recovery, you know, how can the, that, you gotta start the day off that way. I mean, it's, I do my prayer and meditation in the morning, but on the way to work, even if it's just 5 minutes, that's what goes on. It's like, oh, this is great. Oh, I was like, is there a question back there? We good? Oh, thank you, Alan. But again, I know better is the next one. It's like, you know, I know myself more than anyone here knows me. And really, that's the problem. It's that self-confidence that I know, you know. And, you know, hunger is another big thing that we have. Because we, for myself, and I'll speak, you know, is you, when I start these, when I would ever start a diet or start a new way of eating, this was the makeup period. You know, and so I always had to overachieve in that area. I would have to, oh, well, I can't eat this. My salad at lunch, I kid you, it's the 9.5 cup Tupperware container. It has 4 heads of romaine lettuce. It has, chicken breast. It has 1 piece of cheese. It has, 1/2 cup of slivered almonds. And it has, an apple or a mango or something like that. It's a big, big salad. And, it has poppy seed dressing on top of it. And, you know what? That has been working for 5.5 years. Once I'm done with that salad, but I am not hungry. You know, I'm not hungry for the next 4 or 5 hours. You know, my breakfast is 15 ounces of fruit and a yogurt. I have a snack of 1/2 cup of nuts. I have that salad pretty much every, even on the weekends because I love it so much. After that, it's 12 ounces of fruit for a snack and then 12 ounces of protein and vegetables, whatever fits on the plate for dinner. That's, and it becomes very simple. You know, 12, people are like, 12, you eat, I eat 12 ounces of protein, you know, for dinner. I'm not saying that's what you should eat, but that is what's worked out. You know, how I came up with these numbers, I got a chicken breast and I cooked it and I weighed it. I got a banana and apple because that's what my abstinence started with it for breakfast was a banana and apple. And I went to so many stores to get the biggest apples I could find and get the biggest bananas I could find. And I popped them because I didn't want to have just one. They got small. I'm absolutely afraid. I'm afraid of being hungry still to this day. That's why I bring my food with me. I'm afraid of not being taken care of still. Yeah. But I always am when I'm put in a position where I don't have my food, then I have to ask. But people, I think for myself, whenever I was trying to change something and have a losing, you know, whether it was a diet or abstinence, whatever you want to call it, it was always I had to restrict myself. And I like to do that too. I can starve myself. I like doing that. But that's a real trigger. If I'm hungry for any reason, there's something else going on. There's really something else going on, and that's when I need to make the outreach calls. That's when I really need to. I don't know. I'm sure most people know Joe C. here. I don't see him. I haven't seen him in a while. But I used to text him. I'm like, it's 2 hours till lunch, and I'm still hungry. And he would send me a picture of a donut, you know. He would text me a picture of a donut or a cake or a pie. I hope it wasn't standing there in front of him. But, you know, it was in his, you know, phone somewhere. But you know what? Everybody laughed. You know, I would laugh about it, and it would lighten the mood, and then I was no longer hungry. I just in that simple connection with another human being, I was no longer hungry. You know, hunger is a real thing that you know, because it's, I've found working with guys, they want to restrict so much to lose the weight so fast, and this is really just about being peaceful around food. The weight will take care of it. Again, my salad, that people look at that and they're like, you have lost 100 or 96 pounds. And yeah, I've lost 90. You can't lose that much. Yes, I can, you know, because the way I ate before was, you know, a lot of McDonald's. And once the obsession has been triggered, we begin to, of course, negotiate with food. I remember, my brown rice, when I would send in my brown rice, to my sponsor, first time in program, it was brown rice with, like, you know, it was 2 cups of brown rice with cheese in it. I mean, it was just like, I don't know where the cheese came from. I don't know, I was like, cheese is gonna make this better. And so, I would negotiate, well, it's still brown rice, you know. Those eating those gray area foods, you know. We don't particularly, the guys I work with, I don't have any gray, it's for me, I don't have any gray area foods. It's clearly yes or no. I can, you know, as long as it's approved, I can substitute 12 ounces of steak for 12 ounces of chicken, you know. I'm not sending that in every night, but I've gone to steak houses, I've had 12 ounces of steak instead of 12 ounces of chicken, you know. Because it's not a good or bad thing. It is a yes or no thing. You know, yes, if I would eat, just like the raisin experiment, just like if I were to eat 12 ounces of steak for a couple months, the weight would go up, you know. But it's not something, I don't need to keep going back and eating steak, you know. It's something that's like, oh, steak, every once in a while, that's fine. This is the fat serenity. And you know, Roseanne talked about this in Beyond Our Wildest Dreams. She talked about, still being in the food, or speaking of abstinence, but still maintaining the extra weight. And that's one very important thing. What I found in other working with others is, like, we've got to be moving towards a healthy and maintaining a healthy body weight, or it's hard to stick around. It's really hard to stick around if there's not something going on. And so, the selective honesty we already talked about. But this is a program, and they've talked about it in OA. It's like obtaining and maintaining a healthy body weight. If we're eating foods that keeps the weight on, you know, then there needs to be a discussion over, and not just 1 month. My weight went up 2 pounds this month. You know, and my sponsor's like, what would you like to do? I'm like, I would like to wait another month, and, you know, before we make any decisions. But if the weight continues to go up, then there needs to be a discussion. And we've had that discussion before. I do not like that discussion, you know. But if it happens, it's just a number. It's just a number. It's not a good or bad thing. It's just you're down 96 pounds. Your weight was up 2 pounds this month. That's all it is. I weigh once a month. Now, again, other people can weigh more if they like to, but it's not an obsession thing, you know. I'm just like, I know the 5th of every month, that's the day I weigh. I get on the scale, I report it. I've gone 2 months without weighing before because I was out of town. I weigh on my scale. I weigh in the bathroom, the same spot. I tap it a few times, you know, make sure it's still at zero, make sure the ground. I mean, you know, there is a ritual around this, you know. Listen, it's important because it does affect my food, you know. Not that I'm crazy or anything, but, but, you know, that is, it's just a number. It's just a number on the scale. And again, my sponsor will make that decision when it gets out of that range. He knows what my range is. I'm inside the range. I just want to wait another month. How about that? And he's like, okay, that's good. What does struggling with food sobriety sound like? You know, again, I talked about that woman trying a piece of banana bread. Another one that I just heard was I'm reintroducing foods. You know, but you hear it a lot. You hear it from people that I wouldn't expect to hear it from. The reintroducing foods, that all of a sudden that something has changed and that they can now control it. And it's like, again, we go back to this definition of what Bill talks about in the big book, where it's like, you know, once having formed the habit, cannot break it. Once having lost self-confidence and rely upon other, we can never go back. You know, and today I can handle that. I don't look to the future. Today I can handle, oh, I don't need pizza. I don't need Big Macs. I don't need popcorn. Those were all, you know, all really favorites of mine. You know, that was my staple food for quite some time. my food is getting wonky. You know, I'm not sure what the word wonky means, but, you know, but I think we've all heard that before. You know, I think we've all, you know, started playing with the food before to a certain enough degree. Now it's like, wait a minute, once it starts, it becomes very difficult. And it took me five years to get back, to be willing to actually work the program. So for me, the biggest thing, what I do on a daily basis is just protect the gift. That's what I do, you know, and I like sports and, you know, protect the football. You know, that's the main thing, is not to fumble the football, because it took me 5 years, 100 plus pounds, and a lot of damage in my life. You know, I mean, a lot of damage. I mean, my wife, you know, was afraid of me, and I'm not saying she's not still, but she definitely was afraid of me, and she told me so. You know, I'd hit my child, my 6-month-old child, it kicked me. And I felt that was a proper disciplinary thing. 6 months, you know. And I swore it would never happen to my kids, you know. So what does that look like going back out? Just for one piece of banana bread or one Big Mac? I'm not willing to trade that, you know, penny today, that good feeling today, for what it's going to cost me tomorrow. And so, I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food. And it really, that, you know. You know, what was that? you know, that's a hard one. That's a hard one to hear. I don't necessarily know that there's a fix for that one, because. I didn't hear it. I heard a comment. I'm not sure. Is there a question over there? That's good. No.
It was a comment on I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food.
When I hear that, and I think we heard it, somebody said it, and I think he just left the room, about adjusting their honesty. What was that quote? Can somebody, one of the guys know about that? Mike, you know it. Exactly. Maybe that person has more eating to do. I don't know. I mean, it took what it took to get me in these rooms. I don't have any answers for what it's going to take others to get the gift. I know what worked for me. And what does food sobriety look like? You know, there's a group of guys over there at this table, you know, that have lived happy, joyous, and free from the obsession of food. My sponsor and I, you know, Alan, you know, all these guys, you know, that's what it looks like, is being safe and protected from food. You know, and the big step, the promises from the 10th step. We have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even food, for by this time sanity has been returned. We seldom are interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. This is our experience. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And the last line is, ultimately, I may have problems, but food is not going to be one of them. You know, that for me is, that's a guarantee. That really is a guarantee. You know, the Big Book makes a lot of guarantees. It really does. If we're willing to put the foods down and to work the program, big part, the second, we're not even touching, you know, I think that's the Big Book study is working the program. This is about, you know, becoming free from the obsession of food. The real getting really honest about what are your problems with food. You know, what foods can you not handle? Now, this part is going to be the class participation part. What's that? Well, what we're going to start off with is, I need a volunteer. And I'm going to tell you what's going to happen is we're going to, you're going to come up, and we're going to talk, you and I, with in front of everyone here, about what foods are your alcoholic foods. And then Okay, we've got a volunteer already. I like that. Come on up. Take a seat here. Hello. And this is?
Amanda.
Amanda, everybody, round of applause for Amanda. You can sit down. Here, I'll sit right next to you. If there's a... Okay. Here, you want to slide over one? Excellent. All right. Here you go. Amanda's going to fill out this right here on the top. Okay, and you guys will get to it, so don't start it now. Okay, so this is the handout on the first page. Okay, so we're talking about your alcoholic foods here. Okay, so real quick, what foods, once you start eating them, you don't want to stop?
I just had one come up yesterday. I had to put up my red lights, which was white bread.
Okay, white bread.
Yeah.
All right, so white bread's going on the list. Okay. Any that one came up for yesterday? What was there prior to yesterday?
I kind of was in denial that I had a problem with it. Okay. And yesterday I had lunch and I looked at the food and I was like, oh my God, that is so sexy. I just want to eat it all in my face right now. And I was with an OA friend and I went, you need to get the bread away from me. I'm having problems. And then I called my sponsor and she said, yeah, you need to add it to your red light. Okay. And I said, I know, but I don't want to.
It is. It's very, very difficult to give up those foods that we can't control. It looks like you're about to write something else. So white bread.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do I keep going?
Well, yeah. What other foods do you, once you start eating them, you're already looking for your second helping?
Ice cream.
Okay.
Ice cream.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any other types of desserts that, you know?
Yeah, kind of any desserts with sugar in them.
Okay.
Like white refined sugar.
Okay.
I tend to bother me.
Okay.
Sorry. I said any kind of like dessert items with like refined sugar bother me. I can have honey, but anytime I'm having like ice cream, cake, things like that, like I'm just.
So we've got white bread, ice cream, refined sugars.
Yeah.
Okay. So would you say the refined sugar, does that includes desserts, that includes?
Yeah, anything that has like white sugar in it.
Okay.
That, you know, cause sometimes if it's like farther down the list, I'm okay. But if it's one of the top like ingredients in the product, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to eat like less processed food because a lot of processed food has like tons of sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just trying to stay away from refined sugar. If I want something sweet, I put honey in it. And yeah.
So you're putting refined sugar. Are you still hanging on to a dessert? What dessert would not include refined sugar?
I had a homemade pumpkin pie with honey in it.
Okay.
But that was, I talked to my sponsor about it and it had there was no sugar in it at all. I made sure it was just pumpkin spice, honey, and that was it. Like that was, and of course like the pumpkin stuff, but that was it. That was all that was in it. And it kind of, I wanted the flavoring, but it was like, it didn't give me the cravings and it was very good.
Did you just have one piece?
Yes, I was able to have just one piece.
Excellent. Anything else besides the white bread, refined sugar, so that kind of includes the ice cream?
Yes.
Any kind of pasta or rice or...
Not at the moment. But it might be added later. I've only been in program like 4 months. So I'm still kind of like narrowing what bothers me.
Okay. So those are the three things. That's excellent. Yeah. Everybody, let's give her a round of applause because you know what? That's really tough. So when you write these things on here, what we're asking you to say is, listen, we treat these as alcoholic foods.
Yeah.
Okay, this is something that you did, you know, we're not going to play with in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Okay? And so, you know, what are some of the eating behaviors and attitudes that trigger your addiction?
Hmm. I'm trying to think. I'm still kind of learning that, if you will.
Well, I mean, when I don't know if you've had an abstinence and relapsed, you know. Okay, so how long have you been in program?
About 4.5 months. Been abstinent 4 months as of Friday.
Excellent. Okay, that's great. So that you know, one of the things that you know that we find is the isolation is a big one when we don't want to make the outreach calls and things like that.
Yes. Oh yeah, I was just agreeing. Isolation, I think. Definitely.
Okay. Another thing, the people that we can reach out with for our food decisions. Because what we're saying is we're going to make no unauthorized decisions. You know, if there is, you know, again, the pumpkin pie sounds, it's between you and your sponsor. But, you know, we're going to come up with a food plan. And if we're having a problem and we can't get complete our food plan, that we're going to call somebody about that. Okay? So you can write this number down here, and everybody can actually jump ahead on this one and write 323. 369-8048. That's my number. You can call anytime. I might be asleep. I can't guarantee I'm going to answer it. I can't, you know, I cannot guarantee that. But, my name's Tim. Absolutely. So some of we talked about the behaviors that would trigger our food addiction. Number one, it would be for some people like eating in cars. You know, it would be eating off of someone else's plate. You know, this is you know, because again, it's still eating more than one plate. You know. And so, you know, these are the things that in what we've found work is my poor wife one time took now I'll share my food with my daughters. I've got two young daughters, but my wife actually took a green bean off my plate, and I looked at her and I said, and it was a very firm look. I'll give her that. That I said, listen, this is all I get. I'll make you as many cans of green beans that you can have, but this is all I get. And she, you know, she did. She started crying. You know, I didn't mind, but you know, listen, it was my food. I really didn't. I don't. You know, people have asked me to share my nuts, and I don't. I don't share. You know, perfect. So those would be some of the things that would. I don't find eating in a car triggering me, but some people do. You know, fast. You know, going through the fast food. You know, the buffets. Exactly. What's that? Bed, yes, going to, you know, it's.
The example you just gave there, though, didn't sound like you were triggered to eat more food, but it sounded like you were triggered to be less than gracious.
If someone were to, yeah. Oh, yes, if I felt that I didn't get what was mine, I would feel absolutely entitled to go get more. Because that's it's on my plate. I don't go back for second helpings.
I understand.
Right.
So I guess I was just anything that triggers you to even have that feeling, even though you don't go get another.
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Anything that if someone were if I were to share my food with somebody, and then that would be my decision to share it. Like when I give my daughters part of my salad, I don't go get more salad because I'm entitled to it. It's a choice that I made, so I don't share my food most of the time. Yeah. So those are some of the yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I eat 5 times a day whether I'm hungry or not. Because that doesn't carry over to the next day. Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. Yes. Skipping a meal and breakfast, especially breakfast.
Parties.
Yes.
Special occasions.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Buffet. Yep. Yeah. All. Yes, sir. Free food, yes. Free food is a big one, absolutely. Yeah, that was very, it was very difficult for me to actually, I work in a business where all the food, they provide all the food for you all day long. And I, you know, it was very difficult for me to spend the $8 or $9 a day that I spend to make my own food when it's all there for free. And it's good food. But, you know, I make bad food choices, especially after working, you know, 16 to 18 hours. I'm gonna find those Reese cups. And I've, you know, done that time and time again. Movie theaters and unplanned meals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So those are some of the eating behaviors. You will get to what do you call it? Go through that, and there will be. We're going to sit down at each of the tables. Everyone's. These aren't our examples. What you're going to use that piece of paper for is to write your examples. You know, and someone else at that table is going to say that looks fine or that doesn't look fine when we come up with food plans and alcoholic foods. You know, someone else at these. You can walk out of here today with a clean, sober food plan if you so wish to.
I just put down as a thing that triggers obsession is other people making food for me, because a lot of people tend to go, oh, there's not that much sugar in that. It's okay, and I've already started to eat it, but when they say that, and I'm like, really? Thanks.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, the point was made that if you are, if someone else is preparing a food, we're treating these foods like alcoholic foods. We're not going to eat it before we ask what's in it. That's a really good point. Let's see. So those are some of the sections. So let's continue on to the program tools that help support your sobriety. What kind of tools do you use on a daily basis to help you maintain a food plan?
Support from my husband. Mm-hmm. Meetings. I don't go to one every day. I go to one twice a week. Calling people in program. Reading when I'm feeling like I'm having a really hard time. Prayer. Things like that.
Yeah, these are all really good examples of, what do you call it? Of examples of what help us get through this feeling of being alone. I use the text message quite a bit. I can't always talk on the phone, but I can always text. People can always text me, and I can always get back to them. That becomes, you know, the easiest way to get back and forth. We have such great technology. There's speakers right here on these phones. It's all at our fingertips. But, you know, we make choices to isolate, and because it brings us to the food. That's what we want. We want to get back to the food, you know. But there, what we're trying to do is say you don't have to make that choice. Oh, my attitude toward, I don't use them because they make me feel lightheaded. The question is, what are my views about fake sugar? Again, for myself personally, I don't use them because they don't feel good. Like if I put like Splendor equal in my coffee, I get lightheaded. But it is one of those foods that could, if refined sugar is part of your, you know, food sobriety plan, that all of a sudden, you know, what kind of candies are you taking in? What kind of, you know, are you eating to get that high? Are you still trying to get that high with a fake sugar that you got from a real sugar prior to picking up this sobriety with food? There's no sugar in a Clif Bar either, you know. But I've seen lots of guys, you know, use the power bars, the Clif bars, you know, it's one of those things that's like, oh, wow, but it tastes a lot like sugar when you eat it. So those are the program tools. Now, So we're going to flip the page over here in the front, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to go and right here, but you guys, we're going to have breakout groups. We're going to have guys going around helping people come up with an abstinent food plan for today. So did you have breakfast today?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so we have breakfast. What did you eat for breakfast?
I had a cup of yogurt, 2 hard-boiled eggs, and 3 little mandarin, or no, 2 little mandarin oranges.
Okay. So let's write, you know, what you have for breakfast. Nobody go ahead. Okay, you can write your breakfast. There you go. So she's writing down her breakfast.
Are we supposed to write down our breakfast?
We're going to actually have breakout groups where we're going to go aside and we're going to go around and help people come up with. We're going to start off with getting all your alcoholic foods down. And then at the end of it, we're going to go through and make a plan for the rest of the day. So... What is your, by the way, what is your food plan? Do you eat 3 meals a day and snacks, or?
I eat 3 meals a day and a snack if I really need it, but I try to stay away from it because snacking tends to trigger me to want to eat more.
Okay. All right. So, what was said was that, she has 3 meals and one snack, but she tries to, limit the snack because snacking can trigger her. So what is your plan for lunch? With knowing what your alcoholic foods are, what's your plan for lunch?
Well, I actually packed my food for today. I have a salad that has a cup of lettuce, 1/2 an avocado, some sunflower seeds, and a homemade dressing made out of olive oil and balsamic vinegar.
Can I come eat lunch with you? Okay, that sounds great. So that's what you're going to have for lunch. No, it's funny because this morning I went to a meeting. I'm a secretary or literature at a meeting, so I went to the meeting. I packed my breakfast and ate my breakfast in the car on the ride down. I've got my snack, you know, that I'm going to eat after I'm done with this. It's like this. I really don't want to put myself in a position where I'm going to be hungry, and I'll be hungry, and then I'm going to, you know, snap at my wife and all those things that come along with, you know, eating outside when I should be eating, you know. It's just an easier way of life that way for me. Now, so then, do you usually have your snack before dinner? Would it be in between breakfast and dinner, or would it be after?
Probably between lunch and dinner. Okay. Mostly if I ate lunch really early and I ate dinner really late, but most of the time I don't need it.
Okay. All right, so what does your snack look like if you have to have a snack?
Like an egg or a piece of fruit, just like one thing, nothing more.
Okay, that's a very good point. So it'd be one of something. And again, that is really why I went to weighing and measuring, because the apples, a certain time of the year, were small. And I really felt, something had been taken away from me. It really was, I was like, I'm losing out here, you know? And so I went and got the scale. I can have any kind of fruit now, as long as it's, what do you call it? But it's one, you know, it's one 12-ounce snack. If it has to be one apple, it's one apple, or it's one banana. And there are times where I haven't been able to weigh and measure the food, so it's just one. So what does your dinner look like?
It depends on the day, but it would be...
Well, like today. Today, what's it going to look like today? Because that's all we're going to deal with is today.
Let's see. I have to think. I think probably tonight is going to be... my husband packed food for me for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be a tortilla with a piece of lunch meat on it. It's like turkey and a little bit of mustard, some lettuce, and then probably egg or fruit with that too. I can't remember if that was all he packed, but I think I have a kiwi too somewhere, so I might have like a kiwi and an egg.
And would you say that would all fit on one plate?
Yes.
Okay. And also, is just what I'm hearing is now, is that tortilla, is that a corn tortilla or a flour tortilla?
It's flour.
Okay. So now here it is. This is a difficult thing. Would you say the corn tortilla is a white bread? A flour tortilla, a corn would it be?
Would a flour tortilla be
the flour tortilla be white bread in your mind?
I haven't quite thought about that yet. I actually texted my sponsor when we were in the middle, when I was came in, because I thought about it and wasn't sure if she wanted to put that in there either. Because if she decided we need to go on my red list, I needed to find something else to eat.
Are you willing to put that? I mean, is it a problem for you?
I'm fighting it a little bit, but I think I probably would eventually.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, that would be something I would pay real close attention to. Does eating that corn tortilla or the flour tortilla give you that same high that you got from white bread that you needed to get away from today? You know, because that's one of those foods that's like, it's a yes or a no food. It's not, well, maybe in this form. You know, I could probably handle baked potatoes, but I cannot handle potato salad. You know, and for me, it's so much easier to be safer because baked potatoes going to lead to French fries, and then who cares? You know, I mean, after you get to French fries, I'm like, So real quick, we've got 20 minutes left here. So let's everybody give Amanda a round of applause. Thank you so much. So now we're going to go through, and we are going to ask everybody to sit down in this group and start talking about what their alcoholic foods are. Everybody sit, because this table is going to help you come up with a food plan, you know, for the rest of the day. And are you willing to be honest with what your alcoholic foods are? You know? Yes.
Yeah, I have an important question about alcohol.
Mm-hmm. So the question was, and it's a good question, and maybe you could give me an example, but what foods are alcoholic inside your home but not outside your home? And what would your example be on that?
Like I can eat sugar outside the home and not have a craving for it, but if I bring it into the home like a bag of cookies, I'll eat the whole bag of cookies.
Well, mm-hmm. Well, in my experience, the sugar needs to be on your red light. I mean, needs to be, because you might be able to handle it. Maybe that's just vanity. Like, I don't want to totally binge in front of everybody here. But when I'm at home and alone, if it's in the home, I've never experienced or seen anyone say, well, I can eat it inside the house, but not, you know, outside the house. If it's something that affects you, there might be something that stops you from binging outside the house, but you're going to binge at some point. That would be.
If I were to bring it inside the house,
I would say at any point. You know, if you're playing with something that's going to hurt you, it's like I've got to go out here. Like I can go out to the street corner and eat a cookie, but if I walked inside, then I can't eat the cookie.
Mm-hmm. If I were to bring a whole pizza into the house,
right.
I couldn't leave it in the refrigerator and just leave it there. I
need it. Right. And in my opinion, pizza would need to be, because, again, you might get away with it once or twice outside the house, but you're not going to get away with it over time.
Mm-hmm. In a salad, let's say there are
raisins in the salad. Sure. Those raisins come out. That salad goes back. For me. Absolutely. Because again, I want peace around food. I don't want to have to worry about where I eat. Okay. I want peace around food. I do not want to go, well, I can only eat raisins on the third Sunday of every month. I want to be able to eat my salad anytime, you know. And so it sounds like there's controlling, enjoying going on. So real quick, what we're going to do, thank you. These are great questions. And these are questions that you should be asking the people around you. You know, and there'll be guys here that have experience that can come around and help you with these questions. If you have questions, raise your hands and one of these guys who have been doing it will help you. Okay. So what you'll start off with is write down your alcoholic foods. Okay. Write down the foods that you cannot handle.